Then, well, hello everyone, and welcome to another of our Physics at Work Q&A sessions. Hopefully by now you're well aware of what we get up to here at Physics at Work. You'll have seen some of the wonderful videos that our presenters will have put together and seen the sorts of fascinating stuff that people who study physics can end up doing. Today I've got something a little bit different, something that you might not immediately associate with physics, and that's the Department for Chemical Engineering and Biotechnology. And they're just over the road from us here at the Cavendish, but they do some very different sorts of things. And now to get us started, then I shall go through our list of exhibitors and ask them for a little bit of an introduction. Okay then, so firstly, could you give me a little bit of information about yourself?
Yeah, hi there. So I'm Andy Cederman, and I'm an academic in the Department of Chemical Engineering and Biotechnology. So I'm a lecturer here. And as I'm sure you realise, lots of the lectures are going online. And in fact, at the moment, I'm broadcasting from, we've got a special little video conferencing room here where we can do all of our lectures. And the thing I'm lecturing is a really good applied physics course. I'm actually lecturing some mechanical engineering, but it's a basically all about the application of Newton's laws. We're thinking about equilibrium in terms of forces and moments. So that's what I do part of the time in terms of the lecturing. But the other side that an academic does, the other half of what they do, should we say, is research. And so that's sort of when we're not doing the teaching, we'll be going to into our labs or in working in the offices and so on, trying to push the boundaries of science in different places. And my particular area of expertise is using MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, but for engineering applications, or indeed physical science applications. So you've probably seen or heard of MRI as a medical tool, and there was a Wilson brain imaging session yesterday, which some of you heard. So I'm sure they were talking. They do a lot of MRI there, and it's usually used as a medical diagnosis tool. But the reason that it's great in and you know, physics just underpins all the understanding of how we use MRI, and it's one of the really nice things about it, actually, is it's well defined from a physical point of view. From the physics, underlying physics, are something you can really get your hands, you know, you can really understand and get into the depth of those. But so what we do is try and advance the way in which the types of things that we can measure, make the measurements faster or make them higher resolution or being able to see different things. And whilst it's great for looking at, like, we use MRI part largely because you don't have to cut your sample in half. And that's really good when you want to look inside your head. You don't want to cut that in half. It's also really good when you're looking at, when you want to see what's going on inside a tablet that's maybe dissolving for drugs to get them into your body. Or how your catalytic converter's working inside the car. You don't have to chop it open, or how a reactor's working. And so I spend a lot of my time both working out how to get the best information out of MRI, which is really looking at the fundamental physics of that and being creative about how you can apply those different bits of physics, and then looking at really interesting physical applications as well. So one would be looking at ice in the sea melting or freezing, and how that works, and you form interesting mushy layers, porous materials, because you've got this alloy. Essentially, you've got water and salt, and as it freezes at different rates according to what the different concentrations are. So the MRI provides a unique experimental capability to see how these things are going on, both the porosity and the rate of thawing and freezing and so on, and motion within there. But then we can use physical models, develop physical models, to then be able to understand and predict what else is happening in terms of ice melting and so on. And that's some work which we did recently with the Department of Applied Maths and Theoretical Physics. But lots of different application areas, and I'm sure I've taken up more than my so I should stop there and let you hand on.
So it's fascinating, and that's what we're here for today, is to find out what sort of interesting things you can get up to if you've got a good grasp on physics, or a good background in physics. So next up, Rachel, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, yes. So I'm Rachel. I currently lead reliability engineering for Amazon Europe. Really what I want to tell you is how studying physics has given me the opportunity to have a fantastic career. So I did A-levels in maths, further maths, physics, chemistry, and general studies, and an AS in electronics. And then I went to Cambridge and studied chemical engineering and natural sciences, did a master's, then did a PhD. And all because I wanted to work in petrochemicals plants, because to me, they look like great big toys with valves and pipes and things to play with. And that was my great big plan. And then I ended up spending 10 years working for Cadbury because I love chocolate. I love sweets. And so I traveled Europe eating free sweets and chocolate and learning all about the physics of chocolate. And then, you know, I grew up a bit and I thought, well, I quite like beer. So I then spent four years working for the world's second largest brewer, SAB Miller, flying around the world, auditing breweries. So I've been to the oldest brewery in the world, in Africa, in Cape Town at the bottom of Table Mountain. I worked for Cadbury when we sponsored the Olympics, so I got to go to Olympics Park. SAB Miller had this global role, so I flew around Africa in the corporate jet. I've done some crazy stuff and worked with some absolutely amazing people, all because of my physics A-level. And I still actually need to use a little bit of basic physics in reliability, because what we're doing is, like, behind us we have a warehouse. We have to keep all the conveyors, the sorters, the machines running. And a lot of that is, you know, applied maths, physics, or even engineering. And then on top of that, I work with great people. Tackling some of the biggest problems as to how they get all these products to people, particularly during lockdown. And then, you know, organization design, building strong cultures, and even, you know, applying machine learning and artificial intelligence to making Amazon even more reliable. So really looking forward to your questions.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much. I think we've all become incredibly aware of how important reliability is at the moment, I think, thanks to our strange circumstances. Now then, Claire, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what you get up to.
Hello, I'm Claire. I'm a second year PhD student in the department. Before starting the PhD, I did undergraduate in chemical engineering via natural sciences here and really enjoyed it, so wanted to stay on for a PhD. So a PhD is 3 or 4 years spent on your own research project. And mine is looking at stratification in drying films. So in other words, like paint drying, which people joke is really boring, but it actually involves a lot of really interesting physics. So I'm looking at how particles of different sizes arrange themselves in their film as it dries. The goal being to be able to engineer the drying process so you get the particles to end up where you want them to. So this might be when you're coating a car, for example, instead of having to coat it with multiple layers, you could spray it all at once to have the particles separate out by themselves. Oh, wow. So today I drive equations, drive theory, solve them numerically, work with collaborators to do X-ray imaging of the dried films, and planning some experiments, like microfluidic experiments, looking at how particles move past each other.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. Thank you very much. And Nikki, how about you? What do you get up to on a day-to-day basis?
Hi, so I'm Nikki. I'm a third year chemical engineering student via engineering as well. So I did my A-levels in maths, further maths, physics and chemistry not too long ago in 2018. So I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do at university, but choosing the physics and chemistry and maths allowed me to open my doors to a wide range of careers. And then I decided to choose engineering because I absolutely loved how we could apply all the, like, different theoretical concepts that we learned at A-levels into the real world. So that was the main reason why I chose engineering.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And finally, a face that should be a little bit more familiar is Staz, who did the video for us this year for the review of physics at work. So if you'd like to tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Staz. My A-level, I also did some physics and math. I did my graduate as a physicist, but then I started to work more in biological side on it. So what I enjoy the most is to apply some physics tools and setups, mostly optical setups, in order to help biologists to answer their questions. At the moment I'm working in chemical engineering and biotechnology department with super resolution microscopy techniques. And also we're doing electrophysiology measurements. So we measure the voltage inside the neurons and trying to see how neurons are passing their electrical signal from one neuron to another, which is extremely cool and extremely interesting. Yeah, and in principle, I enjoy just applying different physical methods to biology and help biologists, let's say, to cope with their problems. That's my part of it. I'm from bio.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. So just to start off with, a little bit of clarification, if you don't mind, because most of our audience will be 14 to 16 years old. They'll be familiar with science in terms of subjects at school, yeah, sort of chemistry, biology, physics. Now, what's the difference between chemistry and chemical engineering and between biology and biotechnology? I mean, does anyone want to elucidate that for me? Because it's something I'm not too sure about. I think Andy wanted to comment on that.
Well, I'll start with the first bit, maybe the chemistry and the chemical engineering, and someone else might take on the biotechnology and the biology side of things. But so chemistry obviously is about how chemicals themselves interact, how you get chemical reactions going on, and you're usually looking at it at a fairly sort of fundamental molecular level. You're looking at what interaction you've got between one molecule or one atom and another, and what reactions can take place and how you might be able to form certain compounds. Chemical engineering is much more, at least in the application side of things, about how you might produce something on a level which is useful. So how big that is will depend on the application that you're looking at. It might be millions of doses of vaccine, or it might be millions of tons of biscuits or bread or something, which are on obviously very different length scales. But the important thing is that trying to do something with individual molecules, which is the chemistry, is actually a long way removed from trying to produce something on a useful scale. And so then you need to think not just about the chemistry, but also about the mass transport and the thermodynamics of the system and the fluid mechanics and how things are going to work on lots of different length scales. And I think from so that's from an applications point of view, but actually the skills that you then need to develop are highly quantitative skills, so maths becomes really important, and it's about the physical principles of how things are moving around and so on. So then, you know, maths and physics are just as important when you're looking at an engineering aspect, disciplines such as chemical engineering, as the chemistry itself. So I think there's chemistry involved, but also you need to have all these other skills as well to develop really application of physical sciences.
Okay, so it's
to kick in with biology and biotechnology.
I could try to answer about biology, biotechnology, at least as I understand this. Obviously, it might be different for different people, but for me in biology, I guess the most important is to work around any alive object or any alive organism. So starting from cell, from single cell level, and everything that happens inside the cell and going up. In biotechnology, we more try to either mimic the alive objects by creating them from artificial objects, from basically doing some engineering on such level, either trying to understand it by using, let's say, non-alive, more physical objects, right? So like lasers, microscopes, and so on, so on. So for instance, a good example of biotechnology is creating artificial muscle cells, for instance, or some organs, for instance. That's when we try to mimic what is already alive by creating it with human.
Okay, so it sounds like it's both the discipline as we'd understand it sort of from studying it in science lessons, but also how that interacts with larger systems that that you need to both produce it and to create technology to work directly with it. Right. Now then, we've got a question here. First one from the Lees in Cambridge. They're asking, how far can a CPU or any other component be miniaturized while still being able to work with biotechnology? Do we have any ideas on exactly how these sort of technologies might be progressing, or is that something that's still sort of in the realm of science fiction at the moment?
I'll have a really basic go. I mean, I the answer is I don't know the detailed answer to that. What is really, so obviously there's been this Moore's law that we've been following, not only in terms of CPUs, but also in terms of general computing for a remarkably long time over, decades. But interestingly, I think, what this question is getting at is as CPUs get smaller and smaller, the bridge length, I can't remember how small Intel's is at the moment, but it's a few nanometers or 10, just over 10 nanometers or something like that. And at this length scale, the interesting thing is that physics becomes different because quantum mechanical effects start to become really important, and yet quantum tunneling and so on. So there is, and we're fairly close to, as I understand it, the limit of where you can get these to using the current type of physics. So the really interesting thing here is not saying, okay, we've reached the limit, but what physics is going to be used in the next generation or next few generations of CPUs. So my suggestion is that maybe we'll be moving from the to a new type of physics that is being utilized in CPUs as the length scales get smaller and smaller. That's probably the best I can do on that, really. If anybody else is, as I say, it's not an area that I work in itself in terms of CPU and size associated with that.
Indeed, but it's interesting to hear about the interface between these different disciplines that you get with these sort of cutting edge technologies. Now then, we've got a question from KS at Hatch End High School in London. They're asking, how possible is the idea of neural link technology, where a chip is inserted in the brain with the ability to use virtual and augmented reality? Stas has obviously talked about this interface before. Do you want to take that one?
I'm probably not too much, as my knowledge to neural link ideas and so on, obviously it is quite possible. At least from my experience of work with culture cells or also with databases taken from different mice. So already there are lots of experiments when you have different electrodes inserted in the mice brain, and depending on what this mice is doing and which state the mice is situated, you may see different signals. If we can efficiently correlate the signals to let's say their thoughts, their emotions, their state, and so on, obviously we can interpret their signals. We can send this as information, right? So let's say if mouse wants to eat and we know that mouse is hungry, we see some specific type of the signals, and then we can interpret it. And then let's say if we just read this, we can say that, okay, mouse is hungry. So as soon as we can transfer it to another electronic devices, let's say to computer or whatever, we can control actually computer just by sending those electrical signals directly from your brain to computer, let's say. So that all seems very, very possible in the next future, at least for me.
It's fascinating still. Ellen, Claire, this is possibly a bit relevant to what you mentioned in terms of painting just one layer instead of many layers. Environmental concerns, obviously something that's very at the forefront of lots of people's minds at the moment. What sort of technologies is CEB developing that can help with these sorts of environmental things? I mean, as I say, the example of a single layer of paint rather than multiple paints seems an immediate example of this sort of efficiency. But is there anything else that CEB is doing at the moment that is likely to have positive environmental impacts? Yeah, so Andy?
I can probably say a few things about that. But I think one of the interesting things is that, chemical engineers we've always been looking to develop things which are produced on a sort of financially efficient scale and in a financially efficient way. And what's becoming more and more important is that that's actually has been some of the problems associated with things. We're in a world where we're producing too much waste. And so the very skills that we've been using to try and produce things on a large scale, and to a certain metric, to a certain driving, for a certain driver, are also the sorts of skills where we can now start to, for example, think about how you repurpose things, or how you reduce waste. So reducing waste is one thing, but also recycling as well. So one of the groups in the department has spun off into a company which actually has worked out an efficient way to recycle things like Tetra Paks, which can be really difficult to recycle because you've got so many different materials in there. So this is, you know, one of the big difficulties is that in your block of stuff which you want to recycle, you've got so many different materials that you'd need to separate them all out, and it just becomes really financially impossible to do that. But one of the things is by a technique of pyrolysis, they've produced a new method where you can recover useful different parts of the material. So you're getting the aluminium out, and you're getting removing the plastics and so on from, say, these Tetra Paks, which can be very difficult to recycle otherwise. I think that's just one example. There are lots of people now working on energy, things about efficient generation of energy, things about carbon sequestration is another one. So it's become a real driver in the world of chemical engineering, to how we can start to clean things up, how we can start to reduce production of things that are unnecessary, whole life cycle analysis. That's a term that's used for working out all of the different benefits and problems associated with a whole system. So it's very easy just to look at a single thing and you just say, well, we put so much energy into this, without thinking about all the problems associated with other things that are produced and recycling at the end. And so working out all of that and how the best way to do it in an efficient way, and if necessary to recycle things as well, is really key to a lot of the work that's going on now.
Lovely, well, thank you very much. Now we've got another question from the Lees in Cambridge. They've asked, what is the most interesting thing that you've done? And I'm sure you'd add a so far to the end of that, because no doubt there's more interesting things in the future. But has anybody got an example of something interesting they'd like to talk about? Claire, yeah?
Before I looked at paint drying, I did a research project in an undergrad on blood drying, which is gruesome, but there were single droplets of blood that I was looking at. The images form when they dried. The idea that being that the patterns formed by a spot of blood as it dries depend on its composition, and this might be useful for diagnostics, particularly cheap diagnostics. And we had some collaborators in Australia who would take photographs of dry blood and try to compare my model with their photos. And I thought it was just really cool that you could do some maths and have it looking vaguely like what the experimental pictures look like.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Any other examples you'd like to add from anyone else, sir? Oh yeah, Rachel.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that right now I'm doing lots of really exciting things about applying the latest technology to engineering, and that's all really cool. But something that you might relate to a little bit better is one of the things I did earlier in my career was I actually created and produced a brand new chocolate bar. So if you ever remember Cadbury Dairy Milk with cream egg, and there was some real physics in there in terms of working out the size of the bar to give the right weight. And then we had a long conversation as to whether the eggs should be obviously look like fried eggs, but whether they should be sunny side up or flipped. So whether yellow should be on top and so on. And I think that type of stuff is really interesting as well. I also was involved of another not so successful product, but low sugar wine gums. It's totally possible to do that. Public might not love them, but that's one of the cool things that we've done is, you know, replacing sugar with polyols, which aren't as digestible. I'm sure there's some really good physics going on in the gut there as to why you don't digest them. But also from a chemical engineering point of view, you're taking out a liquid glucose and replacing it with a powder, which gives you lots of other engineering or applied physics challenges. So, you know, they're probably a couple of the things you can relate to, but really, you know, using machine learning to drive improvements and the sorts of stuff that we can do with what's called Industry 4.0, which is using small sensors and the big data. That's really exciting right now, but, you know, I've done some cool stuff in the past as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Now then, most of our audience will be in the sort of 14 to 16 year old age bracket. You know, if they were to get interested in chemical engineering or biotechnology and to get involved in it, they'd be looking at sort of starting to work in that field in sort of 5 to 10 years time. So can you comment on what you think that might be different, what might be the same, what sort of new technologies or new ideas are emerging that are interesting you at the moment that might become major areas of study later? I mean, is there anything we can add to that? Rachel?
Yeah, I'll take this one again because I've been looking at, you know, engineering of the future, and I wanted to talk about the microchip implant thing as well, because just because we can do this doesn't mean that we should. And that's a really interesting thing about the future of engineering. So if you really think about physics and chemistry and biotechnology and applying them properly, I think we can solve pretty much any problem. That the challenge is really getting the public's trust and getting the buy-in for some of these solutions to some of the bigger problems from COVID, like we see it played out right now. Stay at home, that's a solution, but actually it's not a feasible solution without the trust. Or if you look at climate change, you know, there are solutions out there, but it requires a change in lifestyle, and it would be the same with the chip. So when I look at the future of engineering, you know, some people say it's genomics, you know, tailoring medicine and treatment to your actual individual genome. Other people are, you know, what Andy was talking about with quantum computing. Some people are talking about artificial intelligence. Other people are going down the blockchain route and this way of authenticating transactions and actually taking money and currency out of the control of the banks, of governments. Now, you might not think that's engineering or physics even, but it totally is, because it's physics that's making that possible through the distributed ledger. So actually, studying physics will let you change the world, but how you change that world and how you disrupt current, you know, status quo is really interesting. So I think it's very dangerous to predict the future, but I can certainly tell you it's going to be different. And really, rather than saying what is the future going to be, we should all be going out there and creating the future that we want.
Lovely. So, Nikki, actually, I know you mentioned that you're a student at the moment. And so what is it that you're hoping to move into in sort of chemical engineering and biotechnology? What is it that interests you that sort of kept you on that track?
So I'm actually really interested. I'm still a bit confused as to what I actually want to do when I graduate. But a couple of the industries I'm currently looking at would either be pharmaceuticals or the food and consumer goods industry. I mainly chose those two areas instead of like the standard oil and gas industry, because working in those industries would actually be able to help other people. Like, I want to study engineering because I want to make a change. I want to be able to help other people and not just use and be able to use my degree for that. So those are the two areas I'm currently considering right now.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much. Now then, we've got about a minute left. So just as one final question to wrap us up, if people are interested in what they've heard today, if this is something that, you know, perhaps they've never come across before, but actually they'd want to get involved, is there something that they can do as sort of young students, you know, even when the subjects might not be offered where they're, you know, what they're doing at the moment? Are there sort of extracurricular things they can get involved with? And what sort of route should they be looking to follow in order to end up in a similar sort of field to the one you're working in? So Andy, if you'd like to take that.
Yeah, sure. So I guess the first thing is, if you're thinking about subjects that you're doing at school, and so, you know, you want to be doing maths as well, you know, an important, so physics is a lot about is about being able to put numbers on things. So you need those good quantitative skills. And in fact, a lot of maths, the maths GCSE, and particularly sort of further maths at A level, is actually applied physics. Is physics, theoretical physics. So concentrate on doing well at your studies at the moment, doing physics at GCSE and A-level. But the other thing is do things that you find enjoyable outside of school, hopefully that have those links to what you're interested in physics. So this, it might be, you know, in enjoying podcasts by various people, but then also thinking about stuff beyond and trying to look at examples in everyday life and work out what they are and trying to maybe research a little bit into those areas. Hopefully you find that interesting and it gives you a bit of an in-depth knowledge, more in-depth knowledge of these particular things, which hopefully you find interesting and manage to enthuse you to help with all the other areas of physics that you may be getting into.
Excellent, thank you. And I think Stas had something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted actually to add, and I really agree with all Andy said. I would just say that probably it's very nice to concentrate in physics, but do not limit yourself in any directions at all. I mean, new world, as far as I see it, become more and more diverse, multidisciplinary. So there are more and more people needed who have knowledge in physics and, let's say, chemistry and biology and can work on interfaces between different subjects. So it's always a very good thing to know, at least somehow to know, different subjects. So that's something that I would definitely suggest to everyone. Just be open to different stuff, to different disciplines. That's it.
Lovely. And Rachel as well. Do you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I mean, totally agree with what Stas and Andy said. I wanted just to add two things. One is, if you study physics and you study applied maths as a topic, you get a lot of overlap at A level. So that really helps because some of the questions and what you learn is the same, and so it's a good synergy to have. And then just to build on what they said, you know, find something that's of interest to you and then pursue it, whether it's through podcasts, reading books, magazines, newspapers, and really start to understand how society and technology interact in an area you're passionate about. And, the world is open to all sorts of possibilities at the interfaces between subjects. And also you can the decision you make now might seem permanent, but you can always change it later. You know, I moved from chemical engineering to what you might consider more mechanical. Just follow, do what you enjoy the most, and the rest will sort itself out.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much. Now that brings us to a little bit after a quarter to 2, so I'll wrap it up there. If you have any further questions, you can find my contact details on the Outreach website, and I'm sure I can pass any interesting questions for these people here today onto them. And if you want to ask, you can look us up that way. We also have feedback forms, and these feedback forms are very important because they're how we judge the success of what we do, and they're how we structure things going forward. So if you've enjoyed what we do today, or what you saw today, if you've enjoyed what we've done throughout the entirety of this exhibition, then please let us know. If there's things you think we'd improve, we're always interested to hear those as well. So if you could take the time to fill that out, you'll find that from the Physics at Work homepage. Now then, I've kept everyone here long enough, so thank you very much for your time. It's been absolutely fascinating, and I shall hopefully see you in the future in better times.